learn the lesson without putting on my name as a reference.
It's official while you're talking.
Too many phone calls from Lakewood. So. First of all, good evening to everyone who joined us this evening. And a real yesh koach in the sense that, you know, this topic of dating is certainly a complicated one. People who've begun to date have seen that for themselves. And certainly there's the need throughout the process of really feeling as though one is not necessarily going through it themselves, but that there are people to turn to for Eitzah, not necessarily myself, but other people, Rabbanim and role models, et cetera, et cetera. And hopefully this evening certainly won't shed any real new light to a chedushim, but certainly at the very least creates an environment, a context, where later on people can seek out and ask questions and discuss some of these topics. The truth is, just as a point of reference, so I am having my 13th year wedding anniversary coming up in the next few weeks, and thank you very much. Someone said I thought I was 23, so that might be like hard math. But and the truth is, not to at all, you know, scare anybody or to create even more of a nervousness that might exist already. But I think a person realizes as they're married for X amount of years that if they even had a Hasaga, they even had a sense how much marriage and a good marriage really is the centerpiece of everything that happens and everything good that happens in their life, they would be even more nervous the night before the wedding than they actually are. You know, if a person recognizes that, you know, everything that they do in their life, if a person thinks for a moment about an apple and an apple core, so you could have the outside of an apple, which is shiny, and it looks delicious, and it looks edible, but if the inner core of that apple is rotten, if it's already become something which is defiled, so then the apple already is ruined. And that certainly is true as well. If a person is not happy with their wife, and a person does not have a good marriage, they can have a great job, they won't be happy. They can have great kids, but they won't really feel satisfied in their home life. They can learn Torah, but they feel that something is missing. The truth is, the happiness, the shalom of the bayis, is something which is the centerpiece that everything revolves around. But that being said, and while that would create, of course, a sense of nervousness, you start dating someone, and you're about to get married. The truth is that great marriages or good marriages are something that can be built over a course of time. Something that a person doesn't all of a sudden have a great marriage the first day they're married or the first week they're married, the first year they're married. You speak to most people and they'll say that the worst year of their life or the worst year of marriage was their first year of marriage, the first 6 months of marriage, they were depressed beyond belief. It's not exactly like a rosy image of Shana Rishona. And then, of course, with time, so with work, with effort, with a real sense of moving forward, so then the marriage builds over a course of time. That's the work that's put in during marriage. But just as much so, there's the hachana that goes in before marriage. You know, one of Yaakov Kamenetsky's children, and this gives you a small insight into the greatness of Yaakov Kamenetsky, he was about to have a child. Imagine a person. The night before, the week before you have your first child, there's a sense of anxiety, there's a sense of excitement. And one of his kids asked Rabbi Yaakov, Abba, whatever he referred to Rabbi Yaakov as, do you have any insights to becoming a good father? He said, you're asking me now? You should ask me 25 years ago. He said, a good father is a person that's been working on themselves for 25 years. And by the exact same token, probably even more so a person that's able to forge a good relationship and be a good husband, and be a loving husband, is not a person that works on it starting from age 21 and 22, and they wake up the day after the wedding and say, now I want to be a good husband. But it's the years of self-avoda that go into the process of being someone who really is a concerned person. And that starts in everything that we do. Right? If a person has no hasaga about what their parents have done for them, And a person doesn't regularly look at their mother or their father and with a sense of appreciation of what they've added to their life. So how much more difficult will it be when they want to get married and to appreciate exactly who the girl is and this person is? If a person doesn't work on the midos and a sense of warmth at this age, it's hard to go ahead and do that afterwards. If a person doesn't build a sense of confidence now, then a person will go into a relationship insecure and needy and feeling inadequate. The achana really is something that takes place now. I want to touch on a few issues and a few different points regarding to dating. People may feel comfortable asking questions afterwards. If you want to, certainly feel free to do so. If not, you can speak to me in private or again, other people in your life. But I do want to just highlight the last point again. You know, the Gemara tells us in Yevamos that a person who finds an Isha, Matzah Tov, and Matzah Simcha, that the real work that a person does on themselves. And if you think for a moment, if a person sits in a base medrash, I don't want to belabor the point, but the point really is so significant. So then a person sits in a base medrash, that's really an environment where it's hard to completely look at yourself. You're surrounded by people you want to impress. The way you speak to people, you don't want to show your real self, your true colors. You're not going to allow the sort of the dark sides of personality to come out. It's hard to really tear down your personality and see who you are in the context of a base medrash around friends and classes and yeshiva. It's really the relationship that you have with the person that you're intimate with emotionally. It's with that person that a person really experiences growth, that a person for the first time recognizes exactly who they are. And it's this process of working on oneself before a relationship, during the relationship, that allows a person to truly develop and truly transform a relationship into something that brings the person closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and really improves the person's complete life. It's a question people often ask as to when do you know or how does one know when they're ready to go out dating? Of course, that's a great question. You know, the truth is, it's very complicated being in a relationship. And really, the more time a person has to grow and develop on their own, not in the context of relationships, so certainly the better off a person is. The more time a person has to work on themselves first and to work on who they are, and they can wait until they're 23, 24, 25, 26. I don't think there's a specific date for it. So the better husband they'll be down the road. You know, the truth is, a person, they're in high school, and when you're in high school, you don't really know yourself. You're often following the pack that's around you. When you go to yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, though it's a different type of experience, it's also one in which your identity is defined by the yeshiva around you. And it's the years after that one is actually out of yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, perhaps in YU or in a different place, that a person acclimates their past experiences, their childhood, their high school life, their yeshiva life, to really figure out who I am as a person, and to work on the individuality of a person in their own life, their own avodas Hashem. If a person starts dating at age 20 or age 21, when they're just at the beginning, at the cusp of that process, it's very difficult to really truly work on yourself, quiet yourself on who you are. Now, obviously the problem is, on the flip side, is that a person feels that even though I want to wait, let me sing yeshiva, I'll learn a full night seder every night, I won't be worried about dating and phone calls and this and everything else. A person often, it plays so much in a person's mind. You know, you want to focus, and all you're thinking about is a girl that someone mentioned to you. There used to be such a thing when I was in YU back in the early 90s, which I think has been, abolished or just went by the wayside, called morgue engagement parties. They would have an engagement party in morgue. Part of the reason it was abolished was that the entire morgue would shake. So people on the 8th floor were calling security, complaining about the engagement party in morgue lounge. So I can mention maybe it's an embarrassing reflection I had on myself. So when I'd be sitting at night seder, I was constantly thinking about these co-ed parties in morgue lounge. And this person was there, maybe that person was someone read to me, et cetera, so I would go over. There was a candy machine in morgue lounge, so I'd find my way over to the candy machine. So at a certain point, you start to think for yourself that holding off dating so you could learn more, perhaps maybe you're not really growing the way you want. The language is playing such a major place in your mind. And by the same token as well, there is an advantage that while a person's still in yeshiva and they're formed, their identity is formed by the yeshiva, that's when a person wants to make decisions about who they want to marry. A person's out in the workforce, some degree a change has happened to a person, and perhaps while it may be better for certain people to wait, certainly there's a tzad to say as well that should start at an earlier time as well. For every person, it's individualistic, but a person should not just do something because every other person on their floor, and every other person they know is dating and engaged and everything else. That's not a motivation to make the most major decision that a person has in their life. The most basic question in dating is for a person to ask themselves what they're looking for in the person they want to marry. What qualities is it that a person is looking for? So the truth is, what I would encourage people to do, and I'm sure that everyone here has done that already, is to make a real assessment of who you are as a person. What are your individual strengths that you've been given as a person? You don't want to come ahead and say, I'm looking for the following 35 things in a person, right? Being on the side of being a rub of a community and hearing phone calls that people call me with, it takes all of the koach I have. Then I hang up the phone on people, a question about this and a question about that. That has nothing to do with the etzem of who a person is. You want to figure out for yourself the etzem of who you are as a person. If you're a person who is exceedingly deep and you want to share that with another person, your person whose whole life is about the tzibor, that's what you want to share in a person. And you want to be able to speak to someone that you trust, an older person who's setting you up with insight into these things, to specifically ask about those areas that are important to you, not a list of 35 things. Obviously, there are areas in life that you want the person to match you in. That's something that you're passionate about, she's also passionate about. But of course, there are other areas in life that you know for yourself that you have a weakness in. And not to say this has to be something that you ask about in advance, but certainly it's a plus as time goes on, that a person can be mashalm you in. Right? You know for yourself that you're not the most responsible person in running a house. That it was up to you, taxes would never get paid. And this happens to many people. So you want to perhaps find someone that's a little more organized, a little bit more able to handle life. If you know for yourself that you're very impatient, perhaps, you want to find someone that's misaking you in that area as well. So you want to find someone that in the key areas you share with, but perhaps in other areas will bring something out in you or help you in your own quest as a person. You're more shy, so you want to find someone that's more outgoing. But in key areas, of course, you want to find a person that very much shares your passion and shares your key identity of who you are. You know, a person often, I received an email this past week from someone who wrote to me in an anonymous fashion, probably know the person's here, so I won't go into details, about a situation about a girl that he felt she had a certain pathologic problem. And he said, can I expect of this person to ever change down the road? I'm going to marry her. She's not the most tsanua person in the world. It's important to me that she's tsanua. She's not so tsanua, but she's great in every other area, right? She's not so into to davening, blah, blah, blah. She, blah, but every other area, she's great. But this area, but it is very, very important to me that I marry someone who's about tsanua. Can I expect that with time that she's going to go ahead and change? And the answer is, of course, a person might change with time. The person should never go ahead and view themselves as the mashkiach ruchani in a relationship, which so often happens with guys in yeshiva, the pressure, the putting on a girl to change equality, that can ruin a relationship. You go with the person, so you accept the person for who they are. If over the course of time, in a very comfortable, in a very supportive environment, a person does grow in certain ways, matov manayim, but that should be the expectation going into relationship. There is a phenomenon in YU, I'm not sure for those guys here who are dating if they've experienced this, but it's really sometimes the best of what YU in this regard. You know, you go in general in the yeshiva world, so then guys are very comfortable asking whether or not a girl is an attractive girl or not. And of course, this is taken to an incredible extreme, and people are emailing pictures and headshots. The whole thing is a total bizayon. Right, but looks become something which is very significant. And guys in YU, because the whole environment of YU often is so l'shem shemayim, and so many guys who are here are coming from a place where they're growing, so a person's almost embarrassed, like they think it's a pigam, a chisar to them, to go ahead and want to be attracted to a person. They feel guilty, I'm not attracted, I feel guilty about it, what does it say about me? Maybe I'm a physical person, I'm guilty, I feel guilty now. It's really a simplistic word. It's really wrong to think that you want to go into a relationship with someone that has a very strong component of intimacy, sexual intimacy, physical relationships, something where you feel attracted to each other on every level, and expect yourself not to be attracted to a person or not have that be an issue or an element. It's viewing relationships in the most microcosmic and the most limited ways. It is two souls connect. And of course, relationships are not that. It's the full entity of who you are connecting with another person as well. So I always thought the pshat was that when the Mishkan was built with gold. It was built in a way that a person with their own aesthetic as a person would be attracted to the Avodas Hashem in the Mishkan. And for that, the Mizbeach Adamah was not enough, but we needed a place where the full humanity, the full human essence would be attracted to the Avodah and the Mishkan. Now that being said, I had a very close friend who got married a couple years ago at age 35. He had dated 300 people, and he was looking for the exact look, like one, you know, the exact height and look and hair and everything. There are people who they're so picky about looks, so obviously that's something which really also is not a proper hashkafa, but that there should be some type of balance between those two extremes. I mention this as a small element, but this maybe for myself also is a point of embarrassment. I remember when I was first dating, so if someone told me that a girl came from a very wealthy family, like I would like run the other direction. Like if somehow there's something about money and the person comes from a wealthy family that a person in yeshiva feels uncomfortable with. Again, in the yeshivish world, it's just the opposite, that a person that's a big, big plus, if there's a person's a PhD, so to speak, right, which is if you have to go buy an apartment from Mabit Shemesh, you'll know what a PhD is, which is a papa has dough. So that's like top on the list. So the truth is, of course, this is not something that should make a difference either way in a person. A person, if a person has money and the parents are willing to go ahead and be helpful in a way that is productive and hands-off and sensitive, that's great. If not, then the person will also manage. But money should be something which really comes into play either for good or for bad in deciding who you're going to go ahead and marry. So I mention as a side note, before I mention something else about parents, that a person should really take the opportunity to include their parents in this process. I speak of a father of teenage or pre-teenage children already. You know, parents who bring you into this world and they do everything for you and they support you, they're there for you, they pay for everything, they do everything, and then you go through the most major decisions, changes in your life, and they're the last people in the world you would ever want to speak to or consult with or be involved with or talk to. So besides the fact that your parents probably have a tremendous insight into you as a person, and your parents probably are people that can offer a lot, just be derech even kavod to your parents to at least include them on some level in that which is going on. What I may mention a very important nekuda, and that's namely the following. You know, a person is going out with someone else, and they find out that this girl comes from family X, divorced family, not close with her mother. This issue, that issue. How do you evaluate the family in which obviously the girl is coming from, and again in different circles that's more significant, less significant, etc., etc.? So on the one hand, if the greatest indicator in my mind of who a girl is going to be is if she's close to her parents and the model that her parents show to her. You know, if a girl goes to Michala and all of a sudden, or Dar Chabina, wherever the case is, so she's enamored by person X that she met there, or life that she saw there, and she's 21 years old. To me, that's much less meaningful, that hashkafa that develops at age 18, 19, than the relationship she has with her mother, who happens to be an amazing person, who's a balas chesed, who's always having people over. That's a much better indicator, especially if that relationship is a close one, of what has shaped and what has formed that girl. You know, more than a girl saying she wants a guy who's going to learn night seder, is a girl who comes from a family whose father learns every night. That really becomes a part of the DNA of a person's family. That being said, many of us, myself included, does not come from that type of family, and yet, obviously, all of us should still have a chance to go ahead and to get married. And the issue really would be then, even if a girl comes from a family that perhaps in certain ways seems like a broken family or family that's dysfunctional, the key issue would be how much she recognizes that and wants to sort of set her own path in life. If you go to this person's house and the people are constantly screaming and the father is denigrating the mother and the mother's screaming at the kid and the girl thinks this is totally normal and she never really dealt with the contentious feeling she has with her mother. She never dealt with the issue that she has with parents. To me, that's a red flag. It's not the issue that the family itself is dysfunctional, but it's a person that hasn't properly dealt with and is ready to move on to the next stage as well. So there's nothing wrong with dating a person that doesn't come from the most amazing family, as long as she has dealt with whatever issues are part of that family. Someone asked me a question this past week, because he says that now at age 23, he can see for himself issues that he can see for himself that he likes, he doesn't like, etc., etc. But what are things that perhaps 10 years down the road that he's not thinking of are the key issues in marriage, right? That has to be probably the best question I've ever heard before about dating. Not so much to look sort of now, but what are the midos that translate into a good marriage 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road? You know, there are many people get married and they say, I'm not saying this is the first thing they're looking for, I want to marry a girl I can learn Maharal with. That's like, you know, I want to learn, I can like tell my Torahs over to. I can like talk in the deepest depths. So when my wife and I got married, we did that for 2 days, right? That was it. Then maybe the last time we sat down together at the Sefer, which was, again, 13 years ago, and before you know it, we had a kid and this and that. And so the Maharals are not totally full of dust, but they're certainly not been shared between the two of us. The question is, what are the key areas that a person really perhaps should have in the back of their mind are things that play out over a course of time in life? So I mentioned three of them very briefly. And to me, if any one of these three areas are not there in a relationship, so it raises a red flag. Not a red flag that can't be overcome, but certainly one that a person should have in their mind as being issues that certainly do play out later. Now, if a person has an image for a moment, especially if you come from a large family, if you want to have a large family down the road, of just what your life is like on a day-in and day-out basis, and again, it's not glamorous, right? People may think, you know, why do you want to get into this in the first place? There's a woman in my community that she's been davening to have children, and they couldn't have kids. They've been married for 4 years, they couldn't have kids. So finally she got pregnant, and she's like throwing up, like every day, like she can't go to work, she's sick, and she's sort of thinking to herself, like, sheesh, like, you know, on certain days, she's thinking, it was like, all that tefillah, exactly, you know. So there's certain days also where you think about all the years you want to have kids, and you want to build a bayis in Yisrael, and there are days, I'll be the first one to admit it, anybody would, where you go into your house, and you're like, you know, the last thing, like, you need right now is, like, your house at that moment. You know, you go into your house, you have, you know, 5 kids or 3 kids. The house is a total mess, because that's what happens when you have kids around the house. The laundry hasn't been done. There's no food for dinner. You don't have enough money to pay the bills necessarily every single month. You're working 12 hours a day. Your wife is working 10 hours a day. You're coming home. You never have dinner together. I mean, I'm not describing Baruch Hashem, I have an amazing life, but this is, like, standard for the course of people living nowadays. And if you marry someone that can't handle the complexities of life and can't handle the stresses and anxieties of raising children and running a house and being able to keep things together, and you see now she's overwhelmed by every single little thing that goes on, and she has a test now and then a test next week, and she's having an anxiety attack. So that's something which perhaps can be worked on and dealt with if she's conscious of. But to me, a person that you see at a young age now is in school, and she's learning, and she's doing chesed here, and she's running here, and she's going to bed late, and she's waking up, and to me, that's a person, if she's doing that at 22, so that's a person that's got to be able to do a tremendous amount, still be involved in the community, still do chesed, open their house, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, as far as something that perhaps portends well, or could be a few issues down the road. Another two issues as well. It's very difficult to be in a relation with someone, and I know this is something that guys brought to my attention before, where you go to someone, even the most gentle of terms, and to say, you know what, just can you be conscious of this? When you do X, Y, and Z, you know, that's hurtful to me. And the person's defensive. The person's not looking to be introspective, to grow. You find that you have to walk on eggshells when you want to talk to her about something in your relationship. A person doesn't have the kochos to be introspective is a person that you're going to find a lot of frustration with in marriage. Now, again, that's something that could be worked on. It's something that she may be conscious of, something that she wants to work on. That's not a reason to end a relationship, but that's certainly a red flag. A person that's not conscious of themselves and working on themselves, you'll find that the relationship will be strained down the road. And lastly, of course, and it should be obvious, is that if you go out with someone now and they have this tremendous tshuka of loving, of being giving, the thing which you're going to love most in your wives down the road is the type of mother that they're going to be. If you allow me for a moment, when my daughter was born about 12 plus years ago, so we were in Gerus that year in 96, and we gave birth in Shaar Tzedek Hospital, and we had Baruch Hashem, okay, the Shana Rishona with ups and downs. I remember my wife was in the emergency room. She had gone through a 32-hour labor already at that point. And when the nurse came in, like the doctor came in, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, Mr. Shabbos. My wife wanted to make sure the doctor was okay. She was apologizing that the doctor had to leave the family, and she was making me get food for the nurses who were there all night, and she called the nurses afterwards. And like at that moment, as we were about to have children, so it was became so crystal clear to me, as it had before them, even more so then, of that midah, a person that has a real positive warmth, and that's going to define your whole house. That's going to be the tone in your house. That's going to be the tone with your children. Your children are going to feel a sense of safety and a warmth in the home. That's a midah that if you see that now portends beautifully for down the road. I want to mention maybe it's a few more issues. The first issue, and I hate to sound like I'm going against often what's found in the yeshiva shveld, is how long a person should go out for. You know, people know in Lakewood, so usually it's 8 dates. I'm not denigrating the unbelievable Talmid Chachamim that essentially guide people in that direction. It's hard for me to imagine that such a thing can have an exact shiur to it. I know the other Rosh Yeshiva in YU, they also give a very distinct time, but every person is different, every relationship is different. You know, my niti would be that often a couple months isn't always long enough to see a person in many different dimensions. How a person is at home, how a person is when you get into a fight, which is not the worst thing in the world, how a person is when they deal with tension, how a person is over a course of time, when the initial warm, fuzzy feelings wear off. So that might be 2 months, it might be 3 months, it might be longer than that. The person shouldn't feel that I need to exactly know after 6 dates I'm going to marry this person or not. So then sometimes these things obviously take a period of time. That being said, you know, there are many people that are like serial 10-month daters. You know, they have like a history of like, they'll date someone for 9 months, break up, and like, you know, 4 or 5 times already until their, you know, face is plastered all over like the Stern dormitory by like, you know, a big like beware sign. But you don't be that person. But no, so I'm not saying this for issues of reputation, but there is a point in a relationship where you're not going to glean much more about the person, right? You've seen the person, their family. You've had every conversation. You've seen the person in many different contexts. You know the person. You know, and now it's just sort of, you know, anxiety that takes over. Now you just can't either decide what to do. There's a certain point where there's like diminishing returns, if you will, where to keep on going out, all that's going to happen at that point is to create more tension, more anxiety, more nervousness. That's when the relationship begins to take a very steep downhill. When you're at that point where you sort of know exactly everything about the person, and then all of a sudden, around and around, where you become paralyzed by anxiety. There's no point in going out past a certain point. It's not like the people in the world are there. I could go out for 2 years and move in with the person. That does nothing to advance a relationship whatsoever. It's very common, and I said my years here, and guys spoke to me, it's probably the issue most that has come to my table. So just that a person goes out, they think a girl's an amazing girl, they think she's going to be a great mother, blah, blah, but they're not like super excited always to be around her. They're not like waiting with like bated breath from date to date. And is that a problem where you don't feel this like sense of passion and excitement and enthusiasm? You know, when I was in YU, so I roomed this guy for many, many years. He's an amazing person. He's now a doctor in Florida. So he was dating the girl from Teaneck. So we were in YU, she was in Teaneck, and they had this unbelievable relationship, never fighting, never anything. And he would go to sleep at night, he would be on the phone with her, right? It's like before cell phones, it's such a thing, if you can imagine such a thing. And then he'd wake up in the morning, it was like 7:30 in the morning, and the phone was still, he's like fast asleep, and he's still holding the phone, like 7 hours later, 6 hours later. So I say, like, Brian, it's like, what's like going on? I said, like, you're on the phone for 7 hours every single night to Teaneck? He said, well, I don't want it to be that she'll wake up in the middle of the night, I'm not going to be there, and she's going to feel betrayed, so I stay on the phone all night. So, of course, that ended when his father got the phone bills. It was like, you know, like $2,000 over, right? So I thought to myself, like, that's like the norm. Like, the norm is, like, this, like, unbelievable, where, like, it's like a, you know, like a lightning bolt experience. The truth is, it's great when that's there, but even if it is there, that lasts for maybe 3 months. It lasts for 5 months. That person is not going to have any better of a marriage down the road because they had this unbelievably giddy time in their relationship, you know, than you who just didn't necessarily have that. But you think the person's great and you enjoy being around them and you think they're going to be a great mother and wife, et cetera, et cetera. Don't be nervous if you're not constantly feeling a state of excitement. That's not what human beings normally feel. If you're dreading going out, of course, that's a different story, but not every person needs to, like, and the people who do that, people are like, I don't want to go out, like, I'm happy when it's over, I don't want to call, so that's obviously not what you're shooting for. But I'm saying, not that a person has to be in such an exalted state. What makes it difficult, again, is that there are guys in the base medrash. I'm thinking of a guy who's in smicha here, they never got into one fight, they never anything, they love being around each other, they quit. So then you see that guy, and you think, okay, that's like normal for everyone else, and it creates a tremendous pressure and almost anxiety when that's not there. I want to briefly just touch on just maybe four or five very quick points. You know, the first is that, I was mentioning a very interesting story. There was, I'm sure everyone here, most people have read All for the Boss. If you haven't read it, you should definitely read it. So it's, Miller from Gruss told me that when it came out, like, that was the highest selling book in Yerushalayim, even more so than Gemara. Like, everyone was like, there's a book of Yaakov Yosef Herman, who was sort of the first super religious Jew in the Lower East Side. So his daughter, who wrote the book, Ruchama Shane, she said about his insight as a person in relationships that when she and her husband went down to the city hall to get a marriage certificate, and they were sitting the way that couples do. You ever walk in, like, see, like, people who are, like, 2 inches away from each other, and they're, like, looking at each other, and this, like, Ruchama Shane, who's, like, a pretty serious person, and then her parents, you know, Rabbi Herman and his wife, were sort of sitting, like, on different sides of the table, right? So she said, how do you, if you and mommy love each other, why you show so little, like, you know, like, passion or emotion in public? He said, I'll tell you very simply. He said, for you and your husband, you have no relationship. You've known each other for 3 months. So that which sort of takes the place of the relationship is the electricity, is the thunderbolt, is the closeness. For your mother and I, we've married for 30 years. We don't need those type of fuzzy feelings to confirm how much we love each other and how dedicated we are to each other. That was a pretty insightful story about relationships and often the role that some of that euphoria plays in relationships. So I mentioned very briefly about a few just sort of unrelated issues. You know, the first is that it's probably an area, or the couple areas in halacha where just based on our own living and experience, Chazal almost did not go far enough in making harchakos and gezeros. And certainly one area, by all means, is the area of yichud. You know, in theory, if you're going out with someone or you're engaged to someone and you're at her parents' house and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and her parents are fast asleep on the second floor of the house, and you're in the basement of the house. So technically, of course, that's not the halachos of yichud. But there's a circumstances that day in and day out, people are nichshol on. And once that happens, and this happens, I would say, dozens of times a year of guys in this space medrash, it destroys the fabric of the relationship of what you had set out to create. Being in a car at 3 o'clock in the morning, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, I don't have to lay out case by case. But a person who knows for themselves of not allowing things to get to a point where then very easily that get there is going to be nifrats to the next stage, it's only something to be conscious of in dating. You know, sometimes guys go out on a date and they're like, they almost act as though they're getting like a root canal. You know, they don't want to go in the first place. They're thinking, they're calculating zmanim, if I call now, I won't miss it over here. Then they go out. You know, that a person has to go ahead and go with the feeling that what they're doing really is part of their avodas Hashem. It's the most important thing they're doing. And to go out and to have a good time, right? Not every person is going to the Marriott and sitting on the 45th floor with like a soda going to be the environment that brings out the most natural, comfortable dynamic. A date's not about, let me get through these like 12 hashkafic questions and find out whether she has a TV or not, and then I'll go back to YU. So it's really about like creating a natural dynamic with a person, and you want to, A, for yourself, have that in mind when you go out. You're looking just to connect with another person, and B, do things on a date that will bring out a natural quality. If you know that you're not a person that enjoys sitting around talking for 4 hours, so do something, obviously, in a kosher way that's going to create an environment that's more natural, that a real personality and connection can be brought out. It's a very serious problem that often exists with dating, and especially in our world where you have basically guys from YU dating girls essentially from Stern with some overlap, I guess, to Landers or Chaim or Queens or other places, where there's a limited pool of people, and you found that, you know, your 4 best friends have dated the same person that you're dating, and it's very easy then that an entire girl's reputation of whether or not she goes out or not is going to really be either vindicated or destroyed, because guys are loose in what they say. Oh, she's not your type, or she's this. Well, okay, maybe the smallest thing from one guy can completely give a pgam to a girl that she'll never recover from. It says about that it's lashon hara. In other words, it's to be incredibly sensitive about how people are being spoken about. And I don't know if it's the best idea that if you want to find out about a girl, to go to someone you know dated her. It creates such, you know, it's really violating to girls who are in the first place really on the raw end of the deal of shiduchim. Everything is really based on the guy and the guy's initiative, and the guy wants to go out. The girl's left sort of waiting for the phone to ring, where it often does not ring, and then her name is bandied around the tremendous necessity of watching what a person says in regards to this issue. I just want to maybe mention one other thing, which I never felt was a problem, but people have told me, girls complain about. I'll just mention a few more pratim, and then we'll conclude. Is it just that guys often, you know, you're around guys for long enough, people sometimes forget like what it means to actually sort of interact with the world that's out there. You know, you have enough years in yeshiva of, like, you know, showering on Fridays. So, you know, so I'm not saying that per se, but in other words, there's I've done it, but no. So the showers in Rosh Chodesh were not so strong during the winter. So anyway, it's a different story. But so just in other words, the person goes out, and again, as I mentioned before, the recognition of how they come off warm, to ask questions, to make eye contact. These are things which I'm sure are obvious to 95% of people, but I'm shocked when I hear just the basic lack of covet of brios that a guy often is conveying in the course of a date. I mentioned before the necessity of asking people for eitzah. The person that asks for eitzah is not necessarily the guy who's been married for 6 months, who sits next to you in a base medrash, or the guy who's in kolo lives down the floor from you, or your friend who's also dating. That's often advice which is born from lack of experience, not a real insight. That if you're going to ask advice to people, to make sure that it's being done to people who've had a number of years under their belt, and not just the people that perhaps themselves are relative neophytes in this area. You know, it's very easy. A person begins, I'm going to start dating. Okay, I'm going to start dating, and all of a sudden the person has a feeling, okay, I'll go with a few people, I'll date for 4 months, I'll get married, everything will be matov manayim. And then all of a sudden, a year goes by, and that initial enthusiasm has turned to something far less than that. 2 years go by, 3 years go by, 4 years go by, 10 years go by. I don't want to, you know, terrify anybody. Or even if it's not 10 years, even but a guy just had a few bad experiences in a row, it's very easy to really sink into a certain level of, whatever it was, depression, but feeling a certain sense of being morose about it, being negative, being pessimistic, and that's obviously something that a person can't allow themselves to fall into. A person who says, you know what, maybe I needed these first 15 experiences so that I can now be an amazing husband on the 16th person. Maybe I wasn't ready back then. What have I learned from those previous experiences? A person's attitude needs to stay positive. I want to say this as a brief word. So there's some people who read the pshat when Paro says to Moshe Rabbeinu, mi v'mi ha-hochim, who are going with you? So the way some people learn that question is, do you think anybody's going with you into the midbar? Do you think someone's going to go with you blindly into this next stage of your life? And of course, Moshe Rabbeinu's response was, b'noreinu, b'skuneinu, b'vaneinu, v'noseinu, etc., etc. Did Moshe Rabbeinu have reason to feel such confidence? Of course not, because it wasn't true. People didn't leave. Many people did not leave. But Moshe Rabbeinu realized for himself that the positive attitude that a leader needed, and how that would affect himself, how that would affect others as well. And everything we do, we approach it with a sense of a positive optimism, not in a way that's foolish. That affects the way that we feel about something, it affects the way that people around us feel as well. I mentioned a brief funny story about someone who had a hard time getting married. When I used to be the rabbi in Albert Einstein Medical School, so you had a number of guys who were single, who were in their 27, 28. Of course, they were constantly being called. What's better than a frum guy who's also a doctor, who's also this, like, you know, so they were like this, like the hotbed of like single activity. So a guy who had already dated 75 people, he came to me and he said, Rabbi Blass, you know, your wife's from Teaneck. He said, what can I do in Teaneck? Where can I go to eat? I said, well, you have people know Teaneck. You have Mabat and you have Noah's Ark and this is a good place, I like that place. He said, no, I didn't want to spend any more than $5, right? So I'm like, okay, that, like, we maybe get like to the core of like the issue over here. So, yeah. So I'm like, Dunkin' Donuts, you can split a donut, you can like, so Baruch Hashem, he's happily married with 2 children, but you know, despite his frugality, so yeah. So I just want to conclude again, just really with the way that I started. There's an amazing story about Shlomo Zalman Orbach that I presume many people are familiar with. So when Shlomo Zalman passed away after his wife, and they asked for Shlomo Zalman right, after his wife passed away, did you go to your wife's bedside? I'm not sure if I asked the question. Did you ask her for mechila? Did you ask her for forgiveness? So he said, No, I didn't. He said, I had no need to. I never said one negative thing to her my entire life. When people were married, it's like hard to imagine. So they said, Rabbi, I mean, in all like fairness, like your whole life, not one argument. So he said, I woke up every single day recognizing the greatness of who my wife was. And every day I woke up next to her and I recognized I was living with a Sefer Torah. I read a story this past week, I think I saw in Rapam Sefer, about Mr. Zalman Meltzer. Mr. Zalman Meltzer was an unbelievable person. I'll mention just two brief stories about him. I was speaking recently to, I don't want to belabor this, speaking recently to Rabbi Benji Levine. Benji Levine is the grandson of Rabbi Aryeh Levine. He's an amazing person by himself. People know the organization Gesher in Eretz Yisrael. So Benji Levine was telling me that when his father wanted to go ahead and get married, so he found the person he was marrying, and Rabbi Isser Zalman was still alive, living in Yerushalayim, of course. So Rabbi Benji Levine's grandmother, Rabbi Levine's wife, wanted to take the new daughter-in-law, Rabbi Aryeh Levine's daughter-in-law, to go meet Rabbi Isser Zalman's wife, who was known to be a tremendous character, like a real personality. So they show up to Rabbi Isser Zalman's house, where he was learning on Rechov Yafo, right off Rechov Yafo, right across from Machane Yehuda. And they walked up, this is Rabbi Levine's wife and her future daughter-in-law, they walked up the stairs, and Rabbi Isser Zalman was no learning, and he said, is the Rebbe at home? He said, no, she's not home, you know, come back later. Okay, they left, they're walking to Rechov Yafo. Now think for a moment, the image of Isser Zalman melts in your mind. Right? It's not like a person, like you would think, like, you know, you can imagine doing this. A minute later, they're walking down the street of Machane Yehuda, and they hear Rabbi Zalman Meltzer screaming after them, running down the street. Right, running. He said, I'm so sorry. He said, that's not the way that you greet guests. I was in the middle of a sugya. I was so involved in what I was learning. I didn't welcome you properly. I didn't greet you properly. Do here, please come back upstairs. I'll pour you something to drink. You'll wait for my wife. I'm so ashamed by my greeting to you. So Mrs. Zalman Meltzer was giving a bechina to a young boy who was, you know, 13, 14 years old. The boy became confused in learning and kept on insisting to Mrs. Zalman Meltzer he had the right pshat. And he was telling Mrs. Zalman Meltzer, no, you don't know, you don't have it right. I guess he didn't exactly know who Mrs. Zalman Meltzer was. So someone walked by later, and he's going on and on. No, you don't know, you're confused. Like, you know. So they're walking, and they come outside. Mrs. Zalman Meltzer is pacing outside the room, telling himself, Gadol kavod habrios mekavod pnei hashchina. So he was thinking to himself, he so much wanted to make sure that he was being makshiv, this 13-year-old boy who was giving him a fight over this thing of learning. And I say that only that that's the real key of hachana, of dating. We work on ourselves, our midos, our karas tatov, our love of people, our bitachon, our real desire to do chesed, even when there's nobody in the room, when no one's watching. It's one thing to go to Hask, and it's one thing to go to Nicaragua to build houses. All these things are great people. But it's another thing outside the public eye to be a person that truly wants to give with no fanfare. We work on those things in our lives. We'll find that we build a tremendous relationship. We have the building tools, the building blocks for Bais Hashem Yisrael, and we can build a marriage that brings us real simcha, gives us real shalom, and allows us to bring out the full potential of who we are. I want to thank you guys for coming. I don't know if there's anybody who wants to ask a question now, or if there is an issue at some point down the road, certainly you all know where I am, and feel free to seek me out. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much.